This is a oral history, Pittsburgh Session, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. My name is Bess Karelitz. My respondent's name is Ruth Frank, 5445 Darlington Road, Pittsburgh, 15217. Ruth, we are very happy to interview you, and we have lots of questions, and we go back quite a far back in your history. Could you tell us about your early childhood, where your parents came from, where they settled? What's something about your growing up, anything about your Jewish background as a youngster? These are the kind of things that we'd like to begin with.
Okay. I was born in Pittsburgh on a street right around the corner, Hobart Street. Let's see. Mother came to this country in 1889 when she was 9 years old. And Dad came when he was 17 years old from Austria. His parents had been killed in a pogrom. Mother's father came first, and then she was one of nine children. They all came together once he settled down in Brooklyn, actually. I always think when I hear Brooklyn about Mother telling us how she used to dance in the streets for pennies. But Dad got her father got a job here in Braddock, Pennsylvania, and brought the whole family there. So that is the beginning. Mother took a job in a store Dad had founded, and that's when they got together. And then I guess I don't remember. My brother was the only one who was born in Braddock by the time the rest of us came. I'm one of four children. We were all in Squirrel Hill. And that'll probably get recorded too. Did you want to know what my dad did?
Yes, we want to know.
Dad started the Oringer Home Furniture Company in Braddock.
Mm-hmm.
Just yesterday, it's funny you ask, I was reading the announcement of Mother's 100th birthday in the Chronicle. And she was telling a little bit of her history then, or I don't think I'd remember all this so well. Dad had worked for a cousin of his who had been in Braddock for a while in the business, and the cousin fired him. So Dad walked across the street and opened his own store. The cousin didn't last very long either. But Mother went to work for him, and that's how they found each other. One of four children. The oldest was my brother, and then three girls. And what kind of childhood did I have? A real happy childhood. We lived on Beacon Street for most of our growing up life. Mom and Dad built the house during the Depression. They got stuck with that, but it all worked out okay. Dad was a really good businessman. He had all kinds of ideas that worked at the time. I think he was one of the first people in the country ever to have a warehouse sale. He had a big warehouse, and he had his, you know, sales there. And so many good things we hear about him as a businessman. As a matter of fact, when he died, Mom got a letter with $50 in the envelope, something that she had owed Dad from the very beginning of his time, since she had never paid him. But it wasn't until he sold his business. He was wonderful with all the mill workers. He ended up with a store in Braddock, McKeesport, even downtown for a little bit, in Greensburg. And these workers were his buddies. I mean, if they were having hard times, he said, don't pay me now, pay me later. So this woman, 50 years later, sent Mom a check for $50 after he died. It was such a cute story. After he sold out, and some big shots, you know, took over, and credit had to be in at a certain time, they didn't last more than a couple years with the Oringer Home Furniture Company. But we learned a lot from just listening to these people. Mom, of course, was very active in Hadassah. And she was just an active person, and I guess that's All I can tell you, it was a real happy childhood.
Good. Do you remember anything about any religious affiliation?
Yes, sure I do. And Dad would felt much more. Dad joined Beth Shalom. He also supported Paul Zedek, you name it. He went around to all those places. Mother always went to Rhoda Shalom. She liked that much better. We children all went. Well, of course, my brother went to Beth Shalom. He was bar mitzvah there. We girls all went to Rhoda Shalom. Yes, we observed all the holidays. Mother lit candles every Friday night. Mm-hmm. We were a religious Jewish family.
Mm-hmm. You had a quite a nice childhood.
We did. We had a great childhood.
And where did you go to school?
I went to Colfax. We all went to Colfax School. We used to go. I always remember the Stanley Can had a house at the corner. And there was a big playing field down beneath, and we would walk through Stanley Can's driveway, and there was a big stairway down to this field. Do you remember that? Everybody I talked to didn't ever remember that field there. That's how we got to Colfax. On rainy days, my father would drive us. He was the worst driver. On snowy days, the worst driver that ever happened. I remember being in a rumble seat with my younger sister and the car spinning around as we were going around that corner. Mother said, "That's it. You'll walk to school from now on."
And do you remember any other kind of education or any kind of things?
Well, I was a Girl Scout at Beth Shalom. I remember walking up to Beth Shalom and doing my Girl Scouting. And dancing school with Gene Kelly on Forbes Street and on up there on Morrifield Avenue. I think he moved there later. Not Morrifield. Off of Beacon, whatever that street is now. And
Munhall.
Rick. Uh-huh. Did you take lessons from Gene Kelly, too? Yeah. Everyone today is so surprised when you tell them you took lessons from Gene Kelly. You did? Yes, he was a Pittsburgher. I remember his mother and his brother Fred. Do you remember them? Yeah.
And what about you went to elementary school to Colfax, you said. What
and
about
on to Alderdice.
On to Alderdice.
Alderdice, yeah, we all went to Alderdice.
Mm-hmm.
And mother believed in lots of sunshine. She took us out of school, even in high school, and down to Florida for the winters. How I ever graduated from high school, I'm not sure, because I had a terrible time with algebra and geometry, but I made it and went on to Cornell University. But every time I look in the mirror, I think of my mother. Baked us in the sun. I have a picture just yesterday. I took it out of the same book I was telling you yesterday. 6 months old, sitting in Atlantic City. Full sun on me, every day. But see, she went to be 102 and bones were strong and everything else. And she did everything you weren't supposed to do. We had chopped liver all the time and ate all the things they tell you don't do. So it all depends on your genes and, that's the way they grew up. She was a wonderful cook.
Mm-hmm.
And while we never cooked at home, cooking came easily to all of us, I guess, because if Dad would call Mom at 6 o'clock and say, "I'm bringing four people home for dinner by 7 o'clock, she always had it on the table without a, worry. So mm-hmm. cooking for us was never any big chore. We all learned to like to cook a lot. Mom was a wonderful cook.
Mm-hmm. What else do you remember?
Mother.
But I'm sure you remember lots of things about your mother.
You want to hear a couple of funny ones. I don't know if you want to record.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I've got a list this long. The first one goes back, and this tells you most of all how we think of Mother. I was in Florida. My sister, Betty Abrams, and Irv took her out for dinner on a really cold night. Irv drops them off. He comes to the restaurant, and he's rubbing his hand. He said, "I am frozen. I couldn't find a parking place near here. I wonder what the soup du jour is." My mother looks up, and she says, "Irving, it's split pea soup." "Oh," Irving says, "the waiter's been here already. That sounds good." Mother says, "No, Irving. Soup du jour is split pea soup." My sister tries to explain to her that soup du jour can be different every day of the week. It's soup of the day. My mother, of course, disagreed. And when the waiter came, my brother-in-law said, what is the soup du jour? And he said, it is split pea soup today. So we never argued with my mother. She was always right.
Always. That's our classic story around that.
But I'll be with you on just a little bit. One of the other funniest ones about mother, there's so many, I don't want to bore you with these. My grandson and she were watching a movie. They were talking about heaven and hell. So Adam turns to mother and says, Nanny, where do you think you're going to go when the time comes? And she thinks very seriously, and she looks at him and she says, Adam, it doesn't make too much difference. I've got friends in both places. And I'm sure she was thinking of people who never contributed to her, you know, to Hadassah. She was known for sending back checks to people who didn't give her enough and telling them, I saw you in a new fur coat recently. You send me more than $25. No, our mother's stories go on and on.
And did you, were you confirmed from Rudolf Shalom?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Tell me about
you. I still hang on to all those old songs and that old black book when they start with that red book.
Very hard. tell me about your, you said you went to Cornell. You mentioned uh-huh. that, about your college days and,
yeah.
and shortly thereafter what you did and so forth.
I was in the class of 43 at Cornell. Going to college was a new experience for me. My sister went to college, my brother went to college. My father didn't think it was very important for girls to go to college. But he said, if you want to go, okay. I got no help trying to decide where I should go or how to send in an application or anything. But that's the way we were, you know, I guess we all had a lot of confidence in not realizing that they had given it to us. I applied, I got in, I didn't have a place to stay. I said to Mother and Daddy, what now? And Mother said, well, if you want to go to Cornell, you better find a place to stay. And somehow we always worked out that way, you know. They were with us 100%, but we were on our own and had to think independently so much about things like that. I had a wonderful time at Cornell. I never finished because it was, the war broke out, and I met my husband there. He went to Cornell, too. And we got married my senior year. And then I went on to having four children. I never did finish my college education. But I was majoring in arts and science, and I loved every minute of it.
And you mentioned, just mentioned you have four children. Mm-hmm. How old are they? What are their names?
Hard to believe.
And how many grandchildren?
Susie's 52. She was our first. And I had a boy, Jimmy, who was 50, and a girl, Linda, who's 48, and another boy, Billy, who was 46. Girl, boy, girl, boy. My husband said it was the only orderly thing I ever did. He might be right, too.
And what about, and what do they do?
Susie's lives in Pittsburgh. She's mm-hmm. the only one of the four who lives in Pittsburgh. And she's very much into the garden, gardening. And she goes down to the health food stores and waters their plants and does that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. An animal lover, a tremendous help to her parents. She was Nanny made. She made Nanny's chopped liver every day of her life. That's all Nanny had to eat every day. And of course, that's the way to get to 102.
That's right.
My son Jimmy works for Boeing, mm-hmm. and he spent his first 8 years. He went to Tulane. First 8 years in Amsterdam, and about 6 years now he's been working for them in Rome, and he's in love with Italy. But of course he learned to like to eat from his nanny too, and he is moving on to Belgium as soon as he gets a home there now, with Boeing still. Mm-hmm. Linda is number three. She lives up in Ithaca. She went to Cornell, married a Cornelian, and they have two children. My first grandchild is going to be married next month. And then she has
a son who is a senior at Brown. Susie, I forgot to mention, had three boys. One went to Brown, one went to Syracuse, and one went to, University of Vermont. My boys are not having any children. One of them isn't even married, and I keep telling him I'm going blank on Frank. Come on, kids. The end of the Frank line.
And what about your husband?
My husband, pretty great guy. He's an engineer. His father was an engineer. His brother was an engineer. His grandfather was the first engineer his great-grandfather, who ever graduated from Rensselaer, was the first Jewish engineer. And they are all engineers, you know? They know just what they're doing. I always think of the, and I clipped an article in Ann Landers about being married to an engineer. I mean, he's precise, always on the ball, but he's the wind beneath my wings.
When your early life before, we know that that you're in business now, mm-hmm. You have your own business, and we'll discuss that in a little while, or maybe later, another session. But how was your life when you were a young woman?
Busy raising my kids. Yeah. Well, how did I start off? Yeah, really, just thought of nothing but the children. Susie was born when war was still on. We were in Dayton, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Jim was at Wright-Patterson Field. And I was busy with the kids all those early years. And then when I had time, I began to do flower arranging for the garden club. And I guess I liked that pretty well. And then I became a flower show judge. And then I became a national flower show judge. And then I thought that was enough of that dealing with women. I'll never forget mixing pink flowers and red flowers and being disqualified because you didn't mix those two colors. I mean, it was that kind of, you know, those kinds of years. And then what did I do? I guess I just became active in you know, I was.
Did you have any Jewish involvement?
Oh, sure. I was chairman of UJF Women's Division. As a matter of fact, we took for a $150 contribution, we rented a plane and we went to the White House. Did you ever hear of this one? Took the whole plane load to see Mrs. Johnson at the White House. All kinds of wonderful speeches there. That was my big accomplishment as UJF chairman. For all you had to do was give $150. Yeah, I was very active in hospital aid and UJF. And what else would I do? Those were my two main, I know, Jewish charities that I worked a long time for.
Mm-hmm. What about outside of the floral? Did you do anything, is there children's school or any kind of interest in those?
Oh, sure. I was on committees for the kids' immunity school.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. A lot of things like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's some of the, I always liked sports, so I did a lot with their sports. And I just went down there with them all and was a lot of the activities that had to do with entertainment, not teaching them or anything like that, sports and dragging them to shows at Phipps and things like that, you know.
Speaking of sports, I see that you have a pool.
Every day.
Every day you're in the pool.
I'm a little bit of a jock.
And
I play tennis. I play golf.
Well,
I walk every day. Yeah.
You keep fit.
Mm-hmm. I don't think of it even as keeping fit. I've always loved sports.
Mm-hmm.
Going way back to camping days, I just loved it.
All right. What about your professional life?
I was in the right place at the right time. You're talking about my business now. Our youngest son, Billy, went to Friends World College. He spent his first year in England, his second year in Greece, on an olive farm on an island off of Greece. And the third year, he was on his way to India to study. This was all, you know, his studying. And he got as far as Afghanistan and just flipped over that country. I think of it all the time with what's happening today. And so we went to visit him. And we were there at the right time. They, nomadic tribes, they were their own bankers, each woman. If her husband did well that year, she put more silver on her back. That was her bank. We came to see Bill at the time of a terrible drought, and they had to sell everything they owned. And I'm a good shopper, I should say that. I love going to bazaars and things like that to see, particularly in foreign countries. I love to travel and love to see what's going on in all the native things. And there was all this beautiful silver, the likes of which I had never seen before, silver and coral. I bought some to make for myself. I had to change it. I mean, you know, the way they wore it, the ethnic tribe people wore it, we wouldn't wear it. But I took it all apart. I think I made 9 pieces when I came home from Afghanistan. And I went shopping at Vendome one day, and I was wearing one of my new pieces. And the buyer flipped over it and asked me what I was doing. And I told her I was making some things for myself for the holidays and for the children for Hanukkah. Incidentally, neither of my girls likes jewelry. I can't get them to wear any. So she said she couldn't buy anything more, but would I give her some pieces for on consignment? 10 days before Christmas, I did, and she sold all but one piece. And it took me about 6 months to convince my husband to let me try to go into business. That was about when I was in my early 50s. And I had been doing volunteer work. You know how sometimes you get tired of asking people for money? So he finally said, okay. And I just was in the right place at the right time. I was one of the first people to do ethnic kind of jewelry.
When you say ethnic?
I mean stuff from all around the world that it's not, you know, Paloma Picasso or anything like that. It's old pieces. I'll show you a couple later and you'll see what I mean. It's like in China, every newborn baby was given a lock to lock in life. If they were poor, the lock, it was the shape of a silver lock this big. The wealthiest ones had jade locks like this. And in between there was ivory. There was, you know, beautifully carved, beautifully worked silver, things like that. And I'll mix China up with, who should I say, I'll mix China up with Japan when I'm making a necklace. And I'll mix Iran up with Israeli jewelry. And it would be nice if the whole world got along. I mean, I put anything I feel like, you know, in a necklace. It would be wonderful if the world got along as well as a piece of jewelry that I put together. But I was in the right place at the right time. No one had done this kind of stuff before.
Do you do it yourself?
I do all the designing myself, yes. Mm-hmm. I now have 2 girls who do the soldering. I string it, and they put it together really professionally.
But originally, how did you do it?
How originally? I went to Saks the first year when Jim said I could, you know, go into business with 20 pieces, and the buyer there flipped over, and he was fondling one of them, and it breaks in his hands, and the beads go tumbling, and he said, and what kind of chain did you put this on? I said, oh, pure silver. He said, that's your first mistake. He said, pure silver is soft and it's going to break. So, I mean, I learned the hard way, you know, when you start to do something. And that's probably the way I did everything all my life. I mean, if I wanted to do something, I did it. And I did it till it worked, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't always. I didn't go study it. I just tried it.
And it happened.
Yeah.
And it happened successfully.
That's right.
And do you, where do you make your things?
In this house that I raised 4 children in. I might, like, if you, as long as you don't record me, I'll let you take a walk through and see what I've done to this zero house. Oh, it's such a mess.
In other words,
the kids come to visit me now. I have to think hard about where I can put them up. I've taken over the whole house upstairs.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
All their bedrooms. And I'm very sloppy. I mean, I'm not an organized worker. I mean, I get an idea here and I go here. And
sometimes it takes me 6 months to put one piece together, so it sits on the floor for 6 months, and the next one can go together like that, you know.
I've noticed you have quite a number of very lovely things.
From all around the world, yes. Yeah, I've always, long before I was in business. This is what I mean by ethnic, I guess, too. This isn't always ethnic, but I love collecting things from all around the world. And you're right, when you look in this house, mm-hmm. I can name you 8 countries right off the bat that I have stuff all mixed.
And you went traveling for your children to visit your children, or did you go traveling because of just the desire to travel?
We always loved to travel. Jim also had business in Iran,
mm-hmm.
Afghanistan's neighbor, for several years, so we did a lot.
Prior
of,
to what's,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. During the Shah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We left when the Shah came in, we left when the trouble in Afghanistan started, all the Middle Eastern countries got knocked off ours. My world's gotten much smaller. We used to go every year to Sri Lanka. And we haven't been there since the Tamil Indian uprising with the Sri Lankans. Went to China starting in 77 and quit after Tiananmen.
End of tape 1, side 1, to be continued.
Oh, goodness.